Okay, great. We worked with this record label, and I was trying to get them to let me talk about it publicly, and I was trying to get the paperwork done, and I didn't quite get it done. So they asked me not to. They asked me not to do it, but I think I'm going to get the paperwork signed on Monday. So I'm just not going to mention the label. But
excellent.
But
you won't guess.
Okay, you won't guess, right? So imagine a world if all the artists in the world were to come together and to unite together on a single platform, a platform like Drupal, for example. All the labels, and you know, actually, if you think about the major labels in the world today, Universal, Warner, Sony, in many cases, a lot of them have already started using and standardizing on Drupal, and so this really is a potential. But what would it take to get all of them to actually, you know, get there, get those sites scaled, be able to handle the business loads, the dynamicism, the fact that new bands are emerging all the time, the fact that artists are blowing up and then other ones are sort of going static for a while, that, you know, they have social engagements and people jump on Twitter and do all these things. So what would it take to get every artist? And, you know, this is a picture of the 25th anniversary of We Are the World, where all these artists from around the world came together for relief for Haiti. And so you got your Justin Bieber, and you got Celine Dion, and just a whole crew of folks in there uniting. And so the first thing that you'd have to think about is, well, what would it cost, right? What's the cost of moving to the cloud, getting all these artist sites on Drupal, and then getting them into the cloud? And thinking about, you know, what would it take to do that? And then, of course, also is, can we scale in the cloud, right? What's the scalability? What are all the technical underpinnings to make it all really come together and work? And so those are the kinds of two challenges that you think about. And so before we do that, we want to take a look and we want to take a step back and say, what are large organizations today doing with Drupal? And so we see them doing a bunch of different things. Number one, they're migrating from physical servers to the cloud, right? We're seeing the virtualization of IT resources. What we're seeing them do is take a look at the 13,000 modules on Drupal.org and combining them together and simplifying Drupal down into a product, a reusable product that works for individual businesses, right? And we're seeing that in publishing companies, we're seeing in Drupal distributions that are available, and then, you know, we see lots of organizations, governments, publishing, magazines, nonprofits, higher ed, all simplifying Drupal down into a product that's easy to use. And then they're also focusing on different service levels. So you come to a university here like UC Berkeley, and you've got the main Berkeley site, but then you've got a site for every department. And so those are pretty high service levels. People expect those sites to be up. But if a professor's Drupal site goes down, or a graduate student's Drupal site goes down, or a research project site goes down at a different level, then maybe it isn't the front page of the news, right? So it's about having Drupal, and it's about having different service levels and adapting to it. And then the next challenge is searching for talent, right? There's such a demand. Right now, today, there are over 3,000 open job recs for Drupal talent in the United States. Right, and so we have this huge community, and the fact that we have 1,400 people here at Badcamp shows that there is, in fact, a tremendous amount of talent out there, but it's still a really critical issue for large organizations. How do I get the talent? How do I retain the talent? How do I take just smart people and train them up on Drupal? Because it's not rocket science. You don't need a university degree to use Drupal. It's just a tool to some extent, right? Or it's a platform, and so you've got to figure out how do you deal with that talent. And so... There was this great little news story in here that I had to block out. But what happened was this organization was a public company, and what started to happen was their stock started ticking down. And so they started looking at their organization and saying, you know, we really have to consolidate. We really have got to save money. What can we do? And so as their stock started ticking down, they started looking around and saying, okay, how do we position ourselves to look good, right? To look good as a financial entity. And show that we're streamlining, show that we're implementing efficiencies, showing that we're getting our costs under control. And so one of the things they looked at was, can we take our capital costs, that fixed cost of renting or owning servers and a bunch of staff together, and can we make that cost be a flexible cost, right? A cost that can then fluctuate with the business so that you don't have to make these big bets where you assume that everything's going to go really well for 3 years or going to go like gangbusters for 3 years, and then it turns out you don't. Doesn't happen, and then all of a sudden you're stuck with assets, you're stuck with more people, you're stuck with more physical hardware components that you need. So that variable, you know, is great. And it's easy to go back to a department or a budget and say, your traffic doubled, therefore it costs more, as opposed to it saying, well, you made a guess 3 years ago, right? And so this is very attractive. And so one of the big drivers for the migration to the cloud for these folks was how to get their cost structure. And we're certainly seeing that in lots of other organizations as well. And this is Metallica, and so one of the key things I talked about already was the service levels. Another big business driver was the service levels. And so Metallica lives here. I think some of them are actually right here in the neighborhood. And you know, they have this great song called Enter Sandman, and it's, you know, this great line in there called Sleep With One Eye Open. And when you're managing these sites, you're managing these band sites, you kind of have to have somebody who's got one eye open when they're sleeping, right? Because you never know when your Drupal system's going to go down. And this is really a big deal for them. And so what would happen is, you know, you'd have hypothetically a band like you know, Metallica that maybe hasn't put out an album for a couple of years, and then you'd have a new hot artist like Josh Groban go on TV, and he would get on TV and millions of fans would slam the servers and slam the infrastructure, and all of a sudden a big artist like Metallica would go down. Or even worse, the manager who's managing Metallica and then managing another little band, and that little band site would go down because Josh Groban was on TV, and all of a sudden all these managers are calling in saying, why are you dissing my band, man? What's going on? My fans are really upset. So now all of a sudden you had started with an IT problem, and now you've got a band management and a relationship management and a business management crisis across the organization. And so having to be able to manage Drupal at a service level is really critical. And so, you know, what we've looked at is two different business drivers so far: getting your costs under control, getting your costs to reflect the way the business needs to be run, and then also meeting service levels that are expected for organizations. These are the two key business drivers for getting Drupal to be adopted by artists around the world.
And Metallica's always been a big fan of open source stuff.
Well, this is a you know, piracy, open source. Some people think share, you know, free equals free, but you know, maybe they're a little different. And so it's interesting. So in order to invest in that, and I mean, I think they make a point, is, you know, it's great feedback. You know, they put a lot of effort in for 25 years, 30 years as a band, investing, working the road and stuff like that to finally get that success. And so I think they want to hold on to reap the rewards of doing that. And likewise, when you're trying to meet the service levels, you can't just go up, spin up a server and hope everything works. You've got to build infrastructure, right? You've got to go out and you've got to invest, and you've got to invest in a bunch of different things. You've got to invest in proactive monitoring, looking at all the things that make sites go down and getting alerts in before they go down. And you've got to be able to resize your infrastructure. So if you have one of these bursty events, all of a sudden you can resize and provide more resources to do it. And you've got to have runtime monitoring. So you've got to get inside the PHP and look at what's going on. And I know, you know, some businesses have critical times. Like if you're trying to sell an album around Christmas and you've got a web service and that web service gets flaky over the network and all of a sudden the site goes down or just goes offline for 5 minutes. How are you gonna figure those kinds of problems out? It's not a Drupal coding problem, it's like a real runtime. And so you've gotta have systems that are runtime monitoring all your services, your PHP, your network connections. And so this is really critical, and devs who are trying to debug wanna be able to get into the production systems, even though it's in the cloud, it's not in a server at a data center they can go plug in the side of, they've gotta be able to get that high level sophisticated monitoring. And then the last is they've got, of course, have a 24/7 operations, right? You've got to have somebody in a network operations center who can answer these calls, who actually knows what's going on. It's not a matter of just flipping a switch on the server. It's somebody who can really debug these problems. And so this is what it takes to get, you know, the investment necessary to meet that service level that a business needs. And of course, logging infrastructure, being able to debug problems, have an engineering team go back and look at problems. And then so the last one was talent. This is a great picture of Lollapalooza, and so what we see here is thousands of fans, but it'll be tens of thousands of fans rushing the field as they open the gates for the concert, and this is kind of its own special migration. And so the first technical problem about migrating to the cloud is how do you migrate all these sites, right? And so we looked at a bunch of challenges of how do you, in this case, you know, they set up a gate and a stair, set of stairs to let all the fans in, and you kind of have to think about the same kind of process about how you do that. So first thing with migrations is what happens if one artist all of a sudden blows up? How do you migrate them so they can get more resources? So that's something you've got to be able to deal with. You have to be able to deal with spikes. And then you've got to be able to migrate to other clouds. And so if you're in an IT organization today, you need to be asking your IT team three questions. What's your solution for using the public cloud? What's your solution for using a hybrid cloud? And what's your solution for using a private cloud? Right? Every IT organization has to have a plan for those three things. Now the answer might be, we're never going to put anything in a public cloud, but we are going to virtualize our resources internally, and we're going to have a private cloud because we want to own all our data. And that's a good solution. That is necessary for many organizations, but you also want to be able to say, hey, some of our stuff's anonymous. Some of our stuff doesn't have to be private. And actually, in a lot of cases, the IT team internally managing cloud is actually a lot more expensive than the public cloud just because of economies of scale, right? If you're an IT team and you've got 25 people on your team managing a bunch of servers, or you're Amazon and you're managing, you know, 5 million servers, you know, even with their profit margins booked in, it's still cheaper to buy these servers from a public cloud. So knowing the costs and knowing the use cases about when it's public, when you can burst out for a weekend. You know, if you've got to stand up an event, you just take one site and put it in a hybrid cloud for a couple of weeks, or you run your Oracle database inside your internal data center, and then you run the web server in externally, and you got that hybrid cloud. And so that ability and that freedom to port to different clouds and that ease of porting to different clouds is really critical. And then, of course, what you need is the tools to do the migration, right? You've got to make it easy, especially when you're moving 200 sites like we were moving. So you got to be able to pull the code out of an SVN repository. Oops, put it into, hang on a second. You got to be able to move the code. You got to be able to move the assets. So in these large migrations, you can have like a million album covers, a million fan pictures, photos of users' profiles, PDFs, concert ticket pictures, every video, every album, bootlegs or whatever. You can have a lot of music, a lot of physical assets or media assets up there. Every picture, every pixel that was ever appeared on a site, and you got to catalog and you got to move this million, you know, a million pieces of assets around from one server infrastructure to another. And so you've got to have special tools to be able to do that and make sure that everything is where it's supposed to be when you move to the new cloud. And so when we look at things, you know, one of the things that we focused on when moving over is really focusing on data services. How do you manage data in the cloud, and how do you manage it efficiently? And so one of the things that we find and we hear from a lot of people is they say, we need real hardware, right? Or they say, we got to be on Rackspace, or we got to buy our own servers because we need speed, or we need real raw power. And you know, I sort of break things down for them, and I say, okay, tell me about that. And a lot of people will complain. One of the weaknesses of Amazon Web Services, where we host, is the raw disk speed. The raw speed is not as fast as some of the other clouds, but they have a lot of other services. So it's really about breaking up the load and thinking about how to do it. And a classic strategy in systems management is using the right service for the right job. And so some people who really need these huge, powerful databases running on these big iron on servers, actually, you don't necessarily need that. What you do is you break up the data, that's the Drupal data that's in MySQL, and you put some of it in Memcache. So you take the sessions table, which is keeping track of all the sessions of all the users who visited the site, and you take the users table and you can put that in Memcache. And some people take Drupal forms and they put the Drupal forms in Memcache, and that offloads some of the compute load. And then instead of turning on the watch, what used to be the old watchdog or Drupal reporting, instead of recording that to the database, use a logging system like syslog, and you get better, you do that. And so in Drupal 6, you can just enable syslog and point to a syslog server. And then if you're doing caching, well, Drupal will generate a page, and then we'll cache that page as a row in a database, right? And so when you ask for a page that's already been built, the database will serve it back up. And that's sort of efficient, but you can really use something better. You can use something like Varnish, which keeps the entire page based on the HTTP lifetime headers, and it keeps it in memory. And so with Varnish, we can see up to 8,000 page views a second being delivered from a Varnish server. And so that's way more efficient than trying to get 8,000 page rows delivered out of a database per second. Okay? And then we'll use other services, like we'll take search. So Drupal's got a native search built into it, and it's great up until tens of thousands of rows. But once you start getting into hundreds of thousands or millions of rows, it's really not the best system. You really want a dedicated search system. So taking all those sites and moving search out into Solr is much more effective, right? And so it's about not just raw hardware here. It's about using the right service for the right job. And then instead of having maybe all your pages or your assets delivered from your local web server, you can use a system like Akamai, a CDN on the front end, and you go ahead and you put all your media assets and all your graphics and all your JavaScript and all your CSS up in a cloud, up in their content delivery network, and then that takes a huge amount of load off your back end. And so that's really critical. Okay. And so what we've talked about so far is two business reasons, right? We talked about the cost structure. We talked a little bit about service level agreements. We talked about the challenges of migration. And so now we're gonna move to the third point. And so one of the third point is better tooling. And so, sorry, let me go back one. And so, And so it's better tooling. And so one of the things we found was that for a lot of people who manage and run Drupal sites, they're bottlenecked by the sysops people, right? They want to push a site live into production, and the production team says, no, we're ultimately responsible for this. We don't want to give you control, right? So everybody's lined up in a queue waiting to know when their site can be pushed live. And it frustrates them because they work late at night, they work weekends, they stay up late all the time, they need to have full control, and so they want to be able to have responsibility for pushing the production system. And so how do you strike that balance between having the right workflow of dev, staging, production, and the right tooling with the fact that you've got these developers, these site developers, who aren't necessarily system admin command line experts, right? And so how do you enable that? And so that was one of the challenges they came to us with. And they said, we have one big SVN repository, Subversion repository, running Drupal. And we said, hey, tell you what, how about we take you off Drupal, we'll put you on Pressflow, because that'll give us Varnish headers and allow us to get better performance out of the site. And instead of having one SVN repo, we'll give you 100 or 200 SVN repos so that every one of the teams developing sites has their own SVN repo. But they can sync back through SVN externals to a master site. So there's a master product built by the company that everybody stays in sync with, but they have full control over the SVN repo, and then they can push out into dev, staging, and production. And so it was really important for them to have tools. And so I'm just going to... So when people are writing source code, what you want to do is you want to keep track of all the changes to the source code. And so you use a code repository. And so the Drupal project for many years used the most common one, a free CVS. And then we switched to, well, Drupal didn't switch, but a lot of people then found that was insufficient. So a lot of people switched over to Subversion. And so now we support Subversion and Git. Happening. So, hey Greg, do you want to come back me up and see if you can make this do some magic? And so what I'm going to talk a little bit about is the Acquia tools. And so the Acquia network allows you to have two really critical tools that were really important for this team. And the first one was the ability to drag and drop through the user interface code from the development environment to the staging environment to the production environment. And do you know how to do like?
Yeah. I was just doing, but it's just not. It's spinning good.
Okay, so reboot.
Yeah.
Okay,
that could work.
Okay. Hopefully, we'll get our slides up. And so that ability for those teams to be able to push code into production, isolated but through a proper workflow, was really empowering. And so those teams really love that ability to do it. And then the second thing we added was another tool called Insight. And so Insight is basically in beta right now from Acquia. And what it does is for the last 4 years, we've been supporting hundreds and now over 1,000 Drupal customers. And what we did is as we were fixing and working on every one of those sites, we kept coming up with a set of rules about how to fix sites, what to go in and look for. And we looked for search engine optimization issues. We looked for performance issues and scalability issues. We looked for security issues. And so now with Insight tool, we've kind of put that into a tool so that when you're trying to think, what's the state of my 200 sites? How do I know? You've got this great tool that just shows on a list, what's the score between 0 and 100 of how ready my site is to go into production? What's my score on security? Go ahead.
I was just asking, so you guys developed the Insight tool.
Yeah.
This is where kind of the non-sysadmin folks can come in and move from dev staging.
Exactly. And so somebody like a content administrator can look at their site and go...
So as long as you're admin, you can, yeah.
Right, you can look at it and say, oh, okay, this setting needs to be changed, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that we'll do. And so, you know, this is really empowering because it saves people time. It's very inexpensive relative to the cost of a human resource to be able to get this great tooling. And so, good thing I printed out my presentation before. And as we wait for this super slow MacBook. So I'm going to show you this wonderful picture of a guy named Josh Groban, really handsome dude. If you don't love his music because you think he's cute, you might love his ex-girlfriend Jessica Simpson. That's where you might have seen her and him on the cover of Examiner at the checkout line. And so he draws a lot of attention. And when he does, so he has a tendency to do fun stuff like go on Twitter and say, everybody jump on my site and let's talk about the end of my relationship with, Hollywood starlet. Okay. And so what happens is, you know, 40,000 people, fans, jump on the site and start commenting like crazy, right? And the sites just, you know, should by all means just completely melt down. And of course, they have to be able to prepare and deal with those kinds of things. And so this is the new lion. You can see it booting back up. And so we have to be able to deal with that. And so the third big challenge that we needed to deal with when moving to the cloud, was scalability. And so working on scalability was really critical. And so I'm going to introduce you to a couple people on our team who helped us deal with scalability issues. And so the first person I'm going to introduce is a gentleman named Eric Webb on our team. And there's Josh. And okay, and so Eric Webb is on our professional services team. And so Eric's job is to be an auditor. And so we basically fly him around the country every week or every other week. And he goes in and he does nothing but works on scalability and performance of Drupal sites and auditing them. And so basically what happened was I flew out to New York and went to Rockefeller Plaza to meet with the CIO and talk to him about migrating to the cloud. And then the next week I got the phone call and they said, Kieran, fly to Los Angeles, go down to the big artist headquarters, meet with their team, and sit down and start doing a site evaluation and begin a site audit. So I spent a day debriefing, understanding about all their infrastructure, and then Eric flew in and spent 2 weeks on site debriefing and really looking at what they need. And so one of the things he did was he looked at all their code, and so they had three different platforms, a Drupal 5 platform, a Drupal 6 platform, and a features-based platform, which is Drupal 6, but with package configurable features that were added on. And so we looked at other kinds of things like their database bottleneck, and so we ran into that problem. I showed you the need for a really big database, and so we showed them, we gave them some advice about how to break those databases up. We also looked at performance best practices, and I'll tell you a little bit about all the tuning that we recommended. And then we basically told them whether or not their site was too complex to be able to port it to the Acquia cloud. And so we were able to write a report for them and give them an idea of what to do there. And so, does anybody know what this is? I don't know if you can see it. There you go. All right, there's you're two rocking. Okay, so there's this great movie called Spinal Tap, right? And it's kind of, there you go. And it's like, Spinal Tap is this great mockumentary about a rock band. And so Spinal Tap was a really important band, and they were so important that they had to go out and have their own speakers designed, custom. And you see their speakers go up past 10 to 11. Right? And so when you're dealing with a bunch of artists, they all feel that way. My site really has to scale. It's really important. And so that's what they expected from us. Prove to us that our sites can scale to 11. Okay? And so what we did was we worked with a team from SOSTA, and I've got a couple of gentlemen right here from the SOSTA team, and basically we did over 60 load tests on this platform. And we started off just testing initially on just a couple of sites where we test and say, okay, how does this site respond to 5 users? Okay, and then we'd look at it and see how fast it was, and we tune a thing. And then we'd go, okay, let's try 50 users. And then we'd try that, and we'd find some problems, and we'd want to do it. And then we went to 500 users, and then tried that. And then we went to 2,000 users simultaneously and looked at that. And then ultimately, we were able to get up to 10,000 users. And so they have a special service that allows us to provision these cloud servers to create load in Amazon Web Services on demand so we can simulate, you know, thousands and thousands, up to 10,000 users coming from browsers in the cloud. And it's you know, relatively inexpensive because of the fact that we're able to use their services. And then they're on the phone, basically with our operations team, while they're generating all this load. And we're looking at their interfaces in SOSTA, and we're looking at how the site's responding. How fast are the pages delivering? You know, which parts of the pages are rendering? What's user registration like? What's commenting like? What's the home page like? And we're doing this all across these different servers. And so they're basically advising as they're turning the knobs up. And then our operations team is on the other side of that, basically saying, okay, we see where it's failing. And so we'll set up a call. We'll test for 3 hours, something like that. We'll get some results back. And then we'll set up a call later the next week. And we'll go back and we'll tune our systems and try to really understand what's broken. And so we did that 60 times over a period of many weeks to basically get that load testing, to basically get Drupal to scale. And so that was, you know, really critical. In some cases, it meant adding more hardware. In other cases, it meant tuning systems and understanding more customization needed to be added.
If it's not too, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. I can answer both.
They use a proprietary load tool?
That's right. They use, yeah, SOSTA is a proprietary load tool. Yeah.
I was going to ask the same thing and ask if you could give us like a ballpark number of what's one of that costs. Like even just off.
They rock.
This is a great introduction. Why don't you mention your tool, your test tool?
It is, yeah, we have right now free version of it, and it is up to 100 users, 100 Vitro users, and it's about just like.
Okay, but what about First Moon Maker? You know, what you were talking about.
Oh.
So this was kind of a special deal.
Really,
I will tell you, for most of the basic ones, we like to test everybody who comes into our cloud, and that typically starts, it gets packaged in a $1,500 fee as part of the setup and the load testing to do it. And typically, normally we go as about as high as 5,000 for a big site that might be doing like north of 10 million page views a month, 20, 30 million page views a month.
Exactly.
So that's kind of the range we figure out. Yeah, hi.
As a range setter, the gold standard of load testing is LoadRunner from HP.
Yeah.
And it's a order of magnitude less.
Yeah. And so actually these guys basically used to be on the LoadRunner team, and they basically said, hey, we're charging hundreds of thousands of dollars to do load testing. I bet you we could spin this all up in the cloud and charge thousands of dollars instead. And so they're going back and eating their previous business. And so that's the way it works. Yes, please, go ahead.
In terms of usability, is it easier, I assume it's easier than LoadRunner?
I'm sorry, what's the
question? Is it easier to use than LoadRunner? Do you know this?
So our approach is very visual. So the test creation, we call it a clip, which is a script in LoadRunner. And it is it's very visual, everything. So there's almost no code.
The thing that we liked about it and the reason we started using it for our customers is that if we didn't load test it up front, we ran into all kinds of problems. And every once in a while, we don't do load testing, and then there's all kinds of problems. And somebody here in the audience can best verify that. and so we almost always try to get the load testing. And the nice thing about it is they're on the phone, they're talking to the customer, there's an independent relationship of a different company that's evaluating our services, and they write these really great reports that come back with it. So they get this independent report. So if you have to go to your marketing department or your president of your university, your boss or whatever, and say, can it scale? Right? You can come back and hand over this great report that says this is what it's going to get to. And that really makes a big difference. Okay? And so the person who did this is Chris Rutter. And so Chris is on our operations team. And he used to be on our support team, but he was so good at all the system stuff that we moved him over to our operations team. And so Chris basically spent several weeks, many weeks, actually several months, slowly grabbing site by site and migrating the sites over. And so, you know, what he got from Eric was code bases, databases that had been scrubbed and ready to go into InnoDB, which is the default database engine we have, and then the assets and the files. And so what Chris did was, one of the things he looked at was, every time they launched a new site, they had to go and in and individually configure it to work with Akamai. And so he came up with a way so that all the sites from this one company could basically automatically be forced to use Akamai. So all their JavaScript, all their CSS, all their media assets, any graphic assets, pictures, videos, all got delivered from Akamai. And that helped tremendously with that. And nobody could get it wrong, right? Everything automatically worked. And so that was a huge, huge bonus in being able to get that to work every time they rolled out a new site. And so he spent a lot of weeks on this. He imported every site and then went through. And the number one issue we found was that the way the sysadmins, and they were great guys, friends of mine, who had done it originally, but it was hard to move the paths that they had built into Drupal about where everything was kind of hard-coded directly to their system. And that made it hard for the people who own the sites to migrate off of one platform to another one. And so a big part of what we did was implement best practices to make it easy and flexible to move the sites around. And so about 80% of the time that Chris was debugging when he was trying to launch a site, why it wasn't working, it was because they had hard-coded a path. You know, this file belongs exactly here as opposed to relative to the Drupal root. And so we kind of went through and filtered all that out. And that actually makes it really easy for this company to be able to pull their sites out of our cloud and go anywhere they want. And so that was really critical. And so Chris is, you know, just an example of one of the great folks on our team that's really good at operations. And so now I want to get really technical, because I've sort of been talking about the business and the technical scalability cases, and I want to get into some specific things. So in the Acquia Cloud, you know, we're several years in now. We're running in excess of 1,000 servers. We've got some clusters where we're running over 65,000 sites for Drupal Gardens, and we've got hundreds of enterprise sites. But every time we come up with a customer, there's almost, especially big ones like this, there's always some customization that we have to do. So we're evolving this platform. There's tons of customization and tuning and optimization. But here's the ones that we really had to do for this particular customer. So the first thing we found was that APC is something called, APC is a type of opcode cache. And so in PHP, it's a scripting language, which basically means that your page gets recompiled on every time the page is loaded. Okay? So that's very expensive to parse a file, convert it into binary code, convert it into execution code. And so what you want to do is read that code in once and then execute, and then store it in memory and then execute it. And that's what an opcode cache does. And we found that it was really important that every site could have its own tuning, right? One default for every site just wasn't really good enough. And so we added APC opcode cache tuning per site. So if it was a really big site, we could change it from a default of, say, 32 megs to 128 megs or something like that. And so that made a big difference, especially if they had a lot of code.
When you're talking about changing the default, do you just mean changing the size? Actually?
So if you're running 200 sites in parallel, rather than saying everybody's got, rather than saying everybody has to have exactly the same amount of memory allocated for APC, in each individual site can change it.
But you're just changing the memory, you're not tuning anything about APC.
Not in this particular thing. It's that individual site customization, yeah. And then the next thing we found was that PHP, what you're doing is you've got all these web servers lined up, and they have a network file system where that PHP code is. And so what's happening is the system's reading that code on page loads. And what happens is there's a setting in PHP about how long you cache the code that you're reading for. And what we found was that in their environment, they hadn't tuned that. And we were able to come up with some slightly better defaults for that and got more efficient things. And these are the kinds of things that, you know, in a small box or, you know, medium size, you don't really see it. When you're dealing with massive scale, you start to see it. And so file path cache tuning is something that we had to do. In the database, there's something called a write buffer, which basically determines how many transactions can be written to the system and stored in memory before they have to be sort of committed to disk, if you will. And so we were able to tune that and get slightly better performance by just taking a slightly better risk. And then we've got these two database servers that are, one is the master, so they're both set up as masters, but one's an active master and one's a passive master. And so the way they sync up is they write to a file called a bin log file, a binary log file about every transaction they're doing. And so what's happening is that writing of that binary log file is very computationally, very I/O expensive. And so we tuned how fast it would write to it. And then we also made sure that if we ever got slammed, we could turn it off and take a risk that the servers wouldn't crash in order to get better performance from an I/O standpoint. We also went through all the sites and we turned off the Drupal access log so that because we didn't want to, it turned out that you get a lot better performance, and the performance ratio, given the fact that they were using other analytical tools to see what people were doing on their sites, made sense to turn off access log at this particular scale, this massive scale. And then the next thing that we wanted to do, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
And then the next one was disaster recovery. And so a lot of our customers were saying, we're used to paying for two different data centers for critical systems, right? We had a couple of earthquakes on Friday. Anybody feel them? Yeah, scary, right? Just reminds us where we live. And so, you know, and we also, at the time we were standing up some of these sites, we actually had Hurricane Irene coming up the East Coast, right? So we were getting ready to evacuate our offices in Boston, and our data centers were right in the path there. And so one of the things that customers started coming to us and saying, listen, it's great that you're in the cloud and stuff like that, but what happens if the cloud's all in one building, right? Right? And so, you know, you heard these massive earthquakes where they take out power poles and uproot the roofs and, you know, flood valleys and all that sort of stuff, and they could take out a power plant. And so they said, you know, we want to be able to run in multiple data centers. And so one of the things we started doing was we implemented disaster recovery so we could run in multiple data centers. And now for actually this particular customer, we're able to run their one database we run on the East Coast and one database we run on the West Coast.
Just
to be safe at that level, because it's just so, they're going to lose so much money if a data center goes away. Right, or if there's an earthquake on the West Coast or an East Coast, then you want to be able to stay up. And there's other customers that we have, like Al Jazeera, who basically want to be in both continents. So they want to have a data center in Ireland, and they want to have a data center in North America.
Why were you using two master databases instead of like multiple read slants or something?
Right, so there's a couple of ways to do it. Effectively, that's what you're doing, but what you're actually doing is you set them both up as masters, and then within MySQL, there's an ability to call an active master and a passive master, right? So you can just flip a switch. We do use DNS replication failover, and then that allows us to basically tell one of them, okay, you're the real master right now. The other one's sort of like
Is that better for some reason?
It just means that they're hot ready to both be writable. Whereas if one's a slave, you're just kind of offloading the reading only.
Yeah,
you want them both to be able to get written to.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't think I put it in here, but that was another thing that we had around the database was we used to have in your Drupal settings.php file, there was one special thing about Acquia Cloud is that when we go to where to put your database, username and password, typically you put it in a little file called settings.php. In the Acquia Cloud, what we do is we have a PHP line of code and we put it in there. And basically what that is a file that says, a piece of code that says, this is where my active master database is. And we found at this scale that reading that file for every transaction was too heavy. And so what we needed to do was move it out of reading that file and move it up to DNS level replication. And so that was a performance improvement we rolled out for them, and that benefits all of our customers today. Okay. Yeah.
Using MySQL database, are you comfortable with that? Because I'm always doing Oracle and things like that. But MySQL holds up and it's good.
I think where Oracle is really great is big financial transaction systems and critical data like pharmaceutical inventories or big accounting systems or stuff like that. You know, organizations like Google, I mean, Google built their ad delivery system, AdSense, on MySQL by sharding MySQL and scaling it out to massive scales. And actually Facebook too, right? So they can get massive scalability. The difference is what is the auditability and criticality of the data? Right, and so if somebody doesn't get their Britney Spears comment up, the world doesn't end. If you miss a transaction in a financial audit for an organization, audits are real expensive. So I think that's the differentiator of which one is more scalable. Now Oracle obviously is going to be much more scalable, but it owns both, right? And it's been investing in NODB for a long time. So I think people do really interesting stuff, and we've started to move towards Procona. Some of our customers had asked us or told us they needed to move to Procona, and we've now found a couple of cases where we're unhappy with some of the problems or the speed of things getting fixed in MySQL, so we're now in the process of rolling out Procona to all of our customers. Okay, and that's a distribution of MySQL. Okay, and then for caching, so now what we use is a combination of two technologies for caching. Remember before I said we build a page in Drupal, and then we'd store it in the cache in the database as a single row of that page, and then deliver that page back. So now what we're doing is we're going to store the XHTML, which is, if you go into your browser and you do view source, it's all that code there. That we're going to store that XHTML, and it's going to get delivered from Varnish. And then when we're doing Akamai, when we have to deliver CSS or JavaScript or images and stuff like that, we deliver from Akamai. And so that combination of technologies is really great for scaling in a big way. So this is Nirvana, probably one of the most influential bands of the 1990s. And I think what was really awesome about them is that, rock and roll was all about big hair and tights. Spandex, exactly, right? That's what rock and roll was in the 80s. And all of a sudden Nirvana came in and they were really innovative. They did some amazing things. The things I love about them is they sort of, had this beautiful poetry and surrealism and then thrashing rock and roll, right? And it was that combination that really changed the world. And I think what was really interesting about Nirvana is that they made alternative music the mainstream, right? Or that maybe it never was the mainstream, but they made the people who were in the mainstream come on over and listen to alternative music. And I think that's what we're seeing today, is that in a lot of ways, this is a Mac. It's proprietary software. I've got an iPhone here. It's proprietary software. 10 years ago when we started the Drupal project, we were convinced open source software was going to take over the world and that everything was going to be open source. And it didn't happen, right? And I think there's some time to take some reflection and really think about why that happened. And I think one of the things is that open source by itself couldn't do everything that we wanted to do. It couldn't help achieve the dreams of moving every artist in the world over, right? So it's the combination of the cloud and these data services plus open source that I think getting us a lot closer to it And that's really the innovation. And so I love this combination of Nirvana, the grunge band, you know, the big heavy jackets and the plaid and the ripped jeans suited up, right? Because what does it take for us to get Drupal to be adopted around the world? It's a combination of the business needs, the service level agreements, the cost structures, and then the technology. It's the migration tools, it's the tools for the end users, site developers, and it's the scalability capabilities. And those five things are what's really driving businesses and moving everybody towards the cloud. And so I think that's, you know, that's really what's made the difference. Oops. a great quote there with the customer. But the customer just basically said they had one of the best experiences ever in moving over to the platform, one of the best launches, and they said it. And then this is my boss, Tim, and Tim is a great guy who's really sort of led this innovation of helping to move big customers over. And so there's a great quote there. And so that's it for my presentation. Happy to take any questions. Thanks, everybody. Okay, anyone else have any questions about this? Yeah, go ahead.
You're using this as a case study. Up to this point, what was the largest that you had done? Why did you select this as your case study?
I think for a couple of reasons. We had